Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these artists. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today, we're talking to Kirk O'Brien. Welcome, Kirk. Thanks for joining us here at the cafe.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. We're doing something a little bit different today. Most of the artists that I have interviewed in the past have been artists who are professors at the universities or professional artists that show at galleries or all of the above. And you've done something sort of very, very different. I'm sitting here, and obviously people can't see it, but I'm sitting here looking at Spikey and Einstein, which is a comic book. Right?
That's correct.
Okay.
I'm not a wall artist.
And you strike me as a fairly bright guy. So for those people out there who are not in the know about comic books, why would a guy like you decide to do comic books? What's that about? Is there a whole sort of subculture, comic book world? Or?
Well, there is. In the past, one of the big advantages to doing comic books is you had sort of a stealth mode.
Uh-huh.
No one expects anything from a comic book.
Right.
And it's supposed to be a piece of trash, so you can get away with almost anything. Whereas wall artists are pretty much constrained by what's going on in their chosen medium.
Uh-huh.
And comic artists aren't. You have no expectations that you're producing any sort of fine art.
Right.
I mean, you're just producing trash, so you can go anywhere and have fun, which strikes me as much more interesting than, you know, talking about the surface of a painting or the
right.
plane or the whatever. You can just goof off. And
so you've had an art background?
I have some.
Right.
I dropped out of VCU. I have an English degree from a very small college in Wisconsin, Beloit.
Right.
So.
But that's really interesting that you talk about, you know, sort of the restrictions that you're faced with in art, you know, where they talk about, you know, surface and they talk about,
ten magic words.
Yeah, the 10 magic
and
words.
If you know the 10 magic words, you can be a fine artist. But
or at least
unfortunately, knowing
artist.
The 10 magic words doesn't make you a cartoonist.
Right.
So, you know,
so what's the difference between, I mean, why cartoonist other than obviously the, like, I don't know. Is it intellectual freedom? Is it creative freedom? Is it?
There's some of that, but there's also, if you're interested in narrative at all, you know,
mm-hmm.
narrative really fell out of art in the early 20th century, out of fine art.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of theories about that, why it fell out of fine art.
What do you mean narrative fell out of fine art?
Well, you know, you have people like Duchamp coming in who
right.
don't do a narrative in
right.
their art, and then you have earlier, you know, I have somebody like Jericho, Raft of the Medusa. That's a purely narrative painting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story being told in
right.
that painting.
Right.
And what I think happened is the underclasses became able to read.
Mm-hmm.
And the upper classes wanted something really unique that the underclasses couldn't understand. And presto, narrative flops out of art. And at the same time, you have cartoons and comics starting in newspapers, you know, like the Hearst newspapers, which are
right.
sort of trashy in their appeal, frankly.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there's a very strongly narrative form. So I think that the narrative just sort of fell out of use in art in the early 20th century.
Huh.
And just has never regained any sort of prominence. You have occasional people like Eric Fischel.
Yeah, right.
Painting in sort of a narrative manner. But,
right.
I mean, you really don't have people like Dan Clowes or, you know.
Who's Dan Clowes?
He's a cartoonist. Or,
really?
Or Carl Barks. There's a name I bet you've never heard.
No.
And there's probably the greatest artist of the 20th century.
Why do you say that?
Because he is. He was the man who created, he worked on the Duck books for Disney for years.
Uh-huh.
And he created Huey, Dewey, and Louie and Uncle Scrooge. And if you look at his stuff and really start picking it apart, it's amazing
really
what he's doing and how subtle he is.
Like what? Talk
well,
about that.
You look at the way he constructs his narrative and everything flows from one panel to another visually.
Mm-hmm.
everything's sort of subsumed to the narrative, and his stories are also very clever and a lot of fun to read.
Mm-hmm.
Characters are very well drawn. Mann was a brilliant artist, and no one knows who he is. I mean, you know,
he's
a major figure, and I don't think anybody knows who he is. Probably 200 years from now,
though. because of the combination of the narrative. I mean, what you would run into is, you know, this is nice in terms of illustration, but you know, but where's the art in it? Where's the comic book? Yeah, where's the conceptual thought? Where's the idea? Where's the...
Yeah, you're sort of running into the problems that wall artists run into.
Uh-huh.
And wall artists, when they try to do a comic book, they think it's very easy, of course, because
right.
it's trash.
Right.
And you look at their comic books, and they're always horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they're horrible is a comic book is composed differently than a single-frame painting.
Right.
You have to be concerned with how the viewer is reading the work, and you have to understand that your compositions can stop them or flow them into the next panel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all subsumed to the narrative, so it's very thought out.
Hmm.
When you do a comic book, if you look at my stuff, it's there. I don't make it blatant, but it's mm-hmm. I pull you through it
right
visually. That's what I attempt to do. And that's why Barks was so good, for instance. That's why
right.
Carl Barks was a great artist, because he could do that, and you never realized he was doing it.
Right, exactly, exactly.
It's totally subtle. But the whole formal rules of composition are different for a comic book, because you've got multiple panels that the
right, exactly.
story is going through, and you have to lead the eye through that. You can always tell when a wall artist tries to do a comic book because they don't compose the panels properly.
And really? And it just doesn't...
Herky jerky.
It just kind of jerks around?
Look terrible.
Yeah.
And your just look terrible, man.
And your stuff, in the one you've done, this is the most recent one, I guess. This one's called Spikey and Einstein.
Right.
You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well...
The cover is color. The rest of it's black and white. Talk about that. I mean, why not all color? Why not?
Well, I love black and white, personally. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you get such a visual punch from it.
Right.
And I guess you can get it from color, too. But, you know, I looked at a man named Milton Caniff, who drew a comic strip called Terry and the Pirates in the 30s and 40s. And he and his assistant used huge amounts of black and white to
mm-hmm.
create very powerful images. And I've always liked that, so I swipe that bit from him. It's
mm-hmm.
not apparent unless you're a cartoonist that I'm doing it, but it's there.
Right.
So, because my stuff looks nothing like his. But, you know, the comic book, the whole idea came about, I was sketching up a little character, and I was working at an elementary school, and a kindergartner said, that character's name is Spikey. And I said, you know, I started thinking about the character, and I said, well, he's dumber than a box of rocks.
Right.
And I was like, how does he get through school? And I decided he had a very smart dog. And that became Einstein.
Okay.
And from there, they just sort of write themselves.
Right.
So.
But, I mean, in a sense, they don't write themselves. Because is that, I mean, so how many of these have you done?
I've got right now, the second issue is complete.
Mm-hmm.
The first issue is obviously complete.
Right.
The third issue is about half complete.
All right, so when you say first issue, these are now for sale, right?
Well, right now they're at Velocity Comics,
uh-huh.
and we'll be sort of debuting it at the Richmond Comic Con on the 10th of June. Sorry.
Okay, so that would be a Saturday?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's a Sunday, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, 10
Oh, the 10th of the... Oh, I'm sorry, you're right, yeah.
10 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at, I can't remember the name of the hotel. It's on Broad Street next to, between Philip Morris headquarters and the Home Depot there. But,
oh, so out west.
Yeah, it's out west.
Way out west.
You know,
okay.
It's right before
something you're... Courtyard, isn't it?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I can't remember
okay.
all these darn things.
Right.
So.
Well, the other thing that struck me about this is how political it is. I mean, you'd have to be sort of deaf, dumb, and blind to miss that. Talk about that part of the work for you.
Well, I'm kind of curious. What did you find political?
Oh.
I'm just curious.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Just the way that the parents are portrayed, right? The father's just sort of this big, dumb capitalist. the mother is sort of this over-involved cell phone addict. So there's sort of this, you know, sort of kind of typical middle-class bourgeois value systems you sort of, you know, are making fun of. And then you've got this sort of right-wing guy, you know, who's screaming about how we all should have rights to our arms, even if that includes nuclear weapons, talking about freedom. I mean, it seems to be pretty packed with political commentary on our times. But no, there was a...
Well, you know, I sort of wrote the story thinking that I wanted a basic story that a kid could read.
Right.
And if... I wanted it to actually be sort of objectionable in some ways, but I didn't want it to be objectionable in terms of sex and language.
Why objectionable? What is why?
I wanted it to make people think, basically.
Right, okay.
And
think about?
Well, there are certain things that bother me in this world. And one of the great things about being a cartoonist is you can hammer them mercilessly.
Right.
So, for instance, cell phones and SUVs. The mother is actually based on a radio compatriot of yours, Dr. Laura Schlesinger.
Me and Laura, you got it, baby.
That's right. You guys are good buddies.
I think the radius of WRIR is now up to 20 miles or something.
Maybe Laura will hear it when
Laura
she's coming
through.
Laura
will hear it. That's right.
The father is kind of generic. Initially, when I drew the strip first, I didn't have any parents at all in it. And it was sort of like Peanuts. And then I said, nah, I need to make fun of some stuff.
So were you able to publish it when you first started drawing it? Or were you just doing this because you wanted to do it?
No, I was just doing it for the heck of it.
Really?
Yeah. What happened was a friend of mine, Brett Carreras in town, saw it and offered to publish it. And I said, okay, fine. I mean, it had just been sitting around. I really enjoyed the character.
So for you, it's really just a pleasure. I mean, it's a real... I don't want to say that it's a easy thing, because I can't imagine it's easy to do these.
Yeah, it takes about 3 months. Actually, the hardest part is
And this is,
them.
What is this? This is not, what, 20, 30 pages,
that
maybe?
That is 27 pages.
27 pages.
The second issue is 22, and I'm going to try to stick to 22.
Right.
But the first story was drawn without the idea of it actually being published.
What about the whole concept of bookmaking, which I know nothing about, but apparently there are artists out there that spend their careers making books. Are you familiar with that at all?
Yeah, vaguely. I mean,
Is this anything similar to that at all in terms of how? Yeah.
All I'm trying to do is put together something that'll look good on the printed page.
Right.
And, you know, I really don't think about arting it up at all. It's supposed to be a comic book. It's not supposed to be a piece of art. You're supposed to be able to roll it up and stick it in the back pocket of your jeans, or read it while you're sitting on the toilet.
Right.
You know, which is about the perfect length for a comic book. Good dump. So then
what makes you want to do this? What is it? Because you love to draw? Is it because of the format? There's just something intuitively engaging about the format for you?
Yeah, I think you sort of hit it. I actually really like the format. And again, part of it is it's not really considered much of an art form, if an art form at all, so you can just sort of get away with stuff. You can just have fun.
Right.
And you don't have to worry about, you know, some sort of oddball criteria. I mean, I really sort of disliked my time in art school.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you felt hemmed in by it?
Well, yeah, and if you tried to do something like a comic book, they would... that was a big...
That's not real art.
No, that was definitely a big negative.
Right.
And, you know, I sort of fell into it for a while. And just decided, I just want to draw, damn it.
Oops, you know, there's work I've seen at VCU now that is... And especially, like, West Coast work that is... You know, I hate to use the word, but is cartoony.
Yeah,
but there's no narrative. There's no language that I've seen that people are like selling these. You know, would take a page of this, put it in a frame, and sell this as art. That would seem sort of stupid. That'd be like selling, you know, one wheel for a bicycle or something. I mean, it really is the sum of the parts.
Yeah, I don't sell my original art either.
Yeah.
As a general rule, I'll sell occasional big drawings, but I don't sell my originals to the stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the fine art I see that people say is cartoony, they're mistaken when they say that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't have the narrative.
Right.
And it doesn't follow the composition rules of a comic book, which, again, they're just different than fine art or wall art.
Right.
We like to call it wall art.
Wall art, I know.
Yeah, wall art. Yeah. Wall art's a really good term because it makes it sound less important.
Right.
It still makes it sound more important than it actually is.
But you see this as important as wall art, don't you?
What?
I mean, you keep saying trashy, but you don't think this is trashy at all, do you?
I don't know. That's really not my decision. I mean, if you
you're going to go at this from a totally postmodern point of view.
You spend a whole lot of time on this thing, so it's hard to think of it
as trash. Right, exactly.
But then on the other hand, one of its big advantages is it's trash.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're in a catch-22.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's a conundrum, and, you know, hopefully the art schools won't start teaching cartooning because then it'll get ruined. And, you know, you're just all like, ah.
Well, what kind of market is there for this? I mean, is there a sort of an underground market of people who really do appreciate cartoon magazines?
No. This is going to be interesting because I'm a little off the beaten track here. I mean, I've got a comic book about a boy and his dog.
Right.
And it's, you know, in a way, it's a kid's book.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't quite fit into the comic book market either. It's
right.
just something I like doing.
I mean, when you say comic book market, you mean like Superman, Batman,
right.
Spider-Man,
which
that kind of, yeah.
Basically what it is.
Right.
I mean, it's either that or quote-unquote adult comics, which mm-hmm. are usually written to the level of, say, a three-year-old.
Right.
I kind of think my stuff has a lot of little nice little slams in it
mm-hmm.
and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I enjoy writing my stuff. So
right.
we don't know if it'll find a market or not. It might sink like a stone and never
right.
be seen again, except outside of my studio.
But that wouldn't stop you.
No. No, I mean, it's...
So the motivating factor here is not, gee, can I put together a comic book that I can, you know, I mean, it would be nice, you know, because, you know, it would be nice to have the money. That would give you more time to, I think you said to me once, your dream would be for this thing to go big and be able to get a house up in Vermont somewhere and just go sit up there and you know, do comic books for 3 months out of the year.
Right. Buy some weird old bicycle from France or something and work on it in my spare time.
Right.
I mean, you know, I suppose.
Get an Italian bike.
You
maybe.
Know, no, the Italians make horrible bikes, man. You go over a bump.
I should tell our listeners that one of Kirk's
bikes.
Other side attractions is bicycles. His house looks like a bike shop on the inside. You know, probably knows more about vintage. I guess vintage is a good word because you're talking about bikes from the 70s, 80s, and maybe 90s, right?
Well, I've got some from the 50s.
From the 50s?
Yeah.
And you've got that one cruiser you've got from, where did it come from, Denmark or something?
Norwegian.
Norwegian cruiser,
yeah.
Right.
I like that bike.
Right.
Velo Combi Special.
Right.
But yeah.
So this is a man who has very distinct interests in life. Not the norm for sure.
I look for things that are fun and cheap.
Yeah, fun. So we got comic books done in black and white. Those are fun and cheap.
Yeah.
You got bikes that you can buy used that are fun and cheap.
Yeah, that's it.
If
the thing winds up making a lot of money, I suppose I'll become like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle guys and
right.
marry 6-foot B-movie semi-porn starlets and waste all my money on a tank I can drive around my private estate, you know, and a couple Ferraris and,
right.
you know, all kinds yeah. of useless things.
And then do comic books about it all, right?
No. You stop doing comic books after you
oh,
have
you stop.
$1 billion.
Oh, you do? Okay.
What's the point?
What's the
who knows what'll happen.
But you're so anti-art and so anti-pretentious. I mean, how can we have this conversation? Don't we need to be talking about the deep meaning hidden behind the...
Nah. I mean, you're kind of getting a window into my creative process here.
Right.
Because I take these things that I see happening and just dump them on top of my characters.
Right.
I mean, I want to do a story where they do a child beauty pageant.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I saw a documentary on it. It was yeah. horrible.
I know.
It was awful. I was like, man, this is a comic.
Well, and
story.
Then Little Miss Sunshine, the movie.
Right. Well,
yeah,
also,
have you seen that?
I want to do one on credit card use.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, sham mortgages, and I mean, just all this
there's
stuff.
A, by the way, there's a wonderful, I don't know her name, but there's a wonderful woman out of Harvard who has studied credit cards. And they're interviewing her on, I mean, really has made it a study. And, oh, and we're interviewing on WRVA, or on the public radio station, whatever it was. And they said to her, well, what kind of credit card do you have? And she said, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't make any difference. She said, you're up against an army of MBAs. She said, they've got it all figured out. She said, there's no way you're going to win. She said, all you can do is pay it off every month. She said, that's all you can do. So it doesn't matter which credit card you get. She said, it is so stacked against you that, you know, if you let your, you know, what they want is they want people who get credit cards and don't pay them on time.
Right.
And that's where they make their money.
Make a huge, yeah. Keep running up.
I mean, it was really, it was astounding what this woman was saying about the credit card company. I mean, these people are bandits.
That's what I want to say in my comment. Really.
Well, look her up. Google her. You know, she's at Harvard. Check it out.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, that's sort of my process is I take these two characters who I know fairly well and toss them into the middle of a situation. Usually the dog is building some ridiculous scientific experiment.
Right.
And, you know, so I just sort of toss them into a situation and let them go.
Right. See where it goes.
Yeah, usually some chaos results.
Well, talk about this one a little bit, because this one is just Spikey and Einstein, right? I mean, is that the title of it?
That's the title of the book.
Okay.
It's going to be the title of the book forever.
All right.
Or at least until Hollywood.
And the storyline, until Hollywood turns it into a movie.
Until I sell out. But
you can't wait to sell out, right?
That's right. I can't.
It is sort of anti-artist thing here. You know, well, usually when I'm talking to artists, they're struggling with the whole thing of, you know, the capitalism on one hand and real self-expression on the other hand, and how one seems to sort of, you know, pollute the other. And you're saying no, I'm way past.
Pretty much.
I'm way past that, man.
I mean, the first issue, I basically have the boy and the dog and the. Boy wants to win the science fair.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog has won the science fair for him the last couple of years. And the dog, of course, is a dog, so he doesn't give a poot about much of anything.
Right.
There's definitely an anarchist streak to the dog.
Right, exactly.
And he likes causing trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So he builds the boy's science fair project. And I won't tell you what it is, but the army has to come to clean it up. And, hey, you know.
And they're not terribly successful at it either.
I managed to get a lot of little digs in it, things that annoy me. And, you know, on to the next one where other things annoy me.
So yeah. 3 months to do 27 pages or so.
Roughly.
Is that because of the incredible amount of illustration involved?
Nah, it's because I'm slow.
Because I got an IQ of 56. What are you thinking?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm drawing a comic book. I can't be that smart.
Yeah, really.
It takes a while, and life interferes. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I get a fascinating old bicycle I have to spend a week and a half tearing apart or something.
Right.
And,
in your spare time.
You know, I wasn't getting any money for it, so it was like, just do it when I have some time.
Have some time to do it.
In the last year... Since Brett gave me the offer of publishing it, I've been working really hard on it. So
Brett is
Brett Carreras.
Brett Carreras?
Mm-hmm.
Who is that?
He's a friend of mine. He owns the largest, probably the largest collection of comic books on the East Coast.
Really?
Yeah.
And so he said publish it, basically what he was saying was I will back this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
And we'll see
And we'll see what happens. Yeah. So how do you get the word out about this? I mean, other than in my doing radio interviews and whatever.
I'm going to the Richmond Comic Con, like I mentioned.
Right, which is June 10th.
The 10th. Then on the
which I guess if you Google that, right?
Yeah.
And it's Richmond, what is it?
Richmond Comic Con.
Okay.
And then I'm...
C-O-M-I-C-C-O-M?
I think so. I think it might be all one word.
Or Comic Con, C-O-N or C-O-M?
You might have to Google it both ways.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it might be... Might be confusing.
Or just Richmond Comic probably would get you there. Well, no, then you end up with all the failed comedians who are living in Richmond.
Well, I know for sure when it is down at Velocity, I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on sale. The book is on sale at Velocity right now, Velocity Comics.
So how do you define success in this for you?
I don't know. If it makes enough money to allow me to keep going, I'll be really happy.
Okay. But, I mean, even if it doesn't, I mean, you do this, you've done this without... any real monetary reason to do it. So a success for you that you do this, that you're done with it, and that you look at it, and that it works for you, or is...
Nah, I'd really like to keep doing it. So I'd like it to be self-replicating at right. least. I mean, if it makes money, that's great. Yeah. I'm not going to...
Yeah, but that's not the driving...
But, you know, I've got like probably 20, 30 issues of stories right now.
Really?
Half plotted out. Mm-hmm. And I'd really like to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if it makes a lot of money, I'll be able to do less of other stuff and... turn it out by
is there that team. Large a market out there? I mean, for
I
these,
I have no idea.
I mean, I wonder if there are. That's why I was asking about, you know, underground stuff or whatever. If there's a whole group of people out there that collect comics like this, or
I think there's a very small market for it, but mm-hmm. occasionally this stuff
just hits.
Busts out.
Yeah,
you know, who knows?
Yeah, what was it? There was a guy who was doing a comic. There was a movie about him. Who was that? Who did a comic book that busted out big time? Well, do you know what I'm talking
it
about?
The Harvey Pekar movie,
maybe
American Splendor.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah,
you know,
was that true or is that just
that's based on real life?
Real life, yeah. So I guess that kind of thing happens.
You know, Ghost World mm-hmm. and Art School Confidential were based on Dan Klaus' work.
Right.
He's given up comics now that he can taste the big money of Hollywood. I don't think he's done anything in a while. So
our next interview will be from your office in Hollywood, right?
I'm not going to Hollywood.
Or your studio in Vermont.
Yeah, Maine, more likely.
Maine?
Yeah, Vermont's,
okay.
Vermont's too highfalutin.
Well, it's fascinating. And it's too highfalutin. It's fascinating and refreshing, I got to say. It really is. And it is obviously, clearly, a unique expression of you know, how you see the world and what kinds of things are important for you to document about that experience. So... If nothing else, I mean, if we can't call it art, at least we can call it a unique, interesting way of experiencing and then articulating, you know, the world around you. It really is great, and it's called Spikey and Einstein. And I'm afraid we are out of time, which, if you can believe that, it zooms by very quickly. And this is the other thing that blew me away is it's only $2.99,
which is right.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the finish.
Which is less than a gallon of gas.
Just barely.
But, really?
You know, the thing is, that is really the finished piece of art, too,
yeah.
That's $2.99.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Where else can you get a piece of art for $2.99?
That's how it's meant to be. It's mm-hmm. meant to be mm-hmm. presented in this form.
Right.
And so you can buy basically my original art for $3, and if you track me down either at the Richmond Comic Con or somewhere else, I'll even sign it.
That's
for
right.
You
signed
which,
it for
which,
me.
Which, by the way, will make it worthless to anal retentive collectors.
That's right.
I just want you guys to know that.
That's
that
right.
If I sign it,
it's completely
it's no
worthless.
Long, yeah, it's no
absolutely. You should get it, seal it in a plastic bag, and
well,
never
now,
look at it again.
Now they take them and they like hermetically seal them in these
really?
Like plastic cases.
Oh my God.
And they've been professionally graded with the grade written on them. I mean, it's anal retention beyond
okay,
the
well,
Call of Duty.
Maybe next issue. Well, buddy, thank you. Thank you so much for coming in and,
no problem.
And doing this. This has really, really been refreshing. And I want to thank you folks for tuning in to Zero Hour. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation about comic books, a break from our normal heady talk about the arts. And have enjoyed our lunch together. We look forward to seeing you on the radio next Friday at 12:30. And again, this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRAR 97.3 FM Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us. And Kirk O'Brien, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okie doke.